On the horizon, some distance ahead of the battlefleet destroyers, was a smudge of smoke out of which the slim lines of the British light cruiser, Cardiff, soon took shape. Astern and towering above her were the heavy upper works and control towers of the German battle cruisers, and at 8 o'clock, the head of the German line entered the gap at the centre of the columns of British destroyers immediately ahead of us. We were then about 60 miles to the east of May Island at the mouth of the Forth. Leading the German fleet was the battlecruiser Seydlitz, flagship of the 1st Scouting Group. Astern of her came Moltke, Hindenburg, Derfflinger and von der Tann. All the ships wore the German ensign, and Seydlitz flew the broad pennant of Commodore Taggart at the peak of her foremast. It was the first time that Hindenburg had been seen by the men of our fleet, and she looked a more powerful than any in our own battlecruiser force. But all of the rest were old enemies, and had fought gallantly on various occasions against our own ships. Von der Tann covered herself in a heavy pall of smoke as she entered the lines of British destroyers, and we saw little of her. About half a mile astern of the battlecruisers came the 3rd and the 4th battle squadrons, comprising most of the larger battleships of the German fleet, and led by Friedrich der Grosse, flying the flag of the German Commander-in-Chief Admiral von Reuter. One by one, they appeared out of the mist and followed their flagship through the gap in the columns of British ships, König Albrecht, Kaiser, Kaiserin, Prince Regent Luitpold, Kronprinz Wilhelm, Grosser Kurfürst, Bairn and Markgraf. It was a melancholy procession, like the captives of a Roman army forced to pass beneath the yoke. The next ships in the German line were the light cruisers, and light they were only in name. Emden, Frankfurt, Bremer, Bremse, Cohn and Dresden. Bremer and Bremse, two heavily armed ships, reputed to be the fastest cruisers afloat, had made sorties through the Sound from their Baltic base on several occasions, and attacked our convoys in the Skagerrak. It was in the northern waters that we had expected to meet them when we were about our job of mine-laying, but they had failed to find us, and it was now too late. As the last of the cruisers entered our lines, we could see the columns of enemy destroyers, 49 ships in all, in five lines, disposed abreast, keeping fairly good station and looking different from our own and being lower in freeboard. Shortly before we came abreast of them, a signal hoist appeared at Abdiel's masthead, and in a few minutes, the flotilla had altered course in succession, 16 points to starboard. As Abdiel passed about 2 cables distant on our starboard side, she was flying H20G12. A signal for the flotilla to alter speed to 12 knots. Signals for alteration of course and speed flew from the mastheads or yardarms of other flotilla leaders, and from the flagships of the other squadrons, which had been fallen astern of us, and in a short time, the entire fleet was proceeding westwards, astride the line of German ships. On completing this manoeuvre, we took station on the starboard side of the 11th flotilla, and closed in on the light cruiser squadron ahead. The whole of the sea in the semicircular arc to port was now studded with ships, moving slowly towards the 4th, within a horizon limited by a typical North Sea haze to a little more than 3 sea miles. At noon, I went up on the bridge to take the afternoon watch with the gunner, and about 1 o'clock had May Island abeam. Far ahead of us, perhaps 15 miles distant, leading the combined fleets were battlecruiser squadrons, with the escorts of light cruisers in the van, and between us and them were the squadrons of the battle fleet. As we entered the constricted waters of the Firth, the flotilla was ordered to break away from the main formation of the destroyers and follow astern of the battle cruisers. So we altered course and proceeding round the rear of the fleet and skirting close to the shores of May Island. We increased speed and stood towards the battle cruisers at the head of the port columns. In making this manoeuvre, we sighted ships of all types. We had a glimpse for a few moments of the lattice in the midst of this great array of British ships. More familiar were the shapes of the two 15-inch gun-heavy cruisers of the 1st Cruiser Squadron, Courageous and Glorious. I was glad to see Courageous again, as she reminded me of an early morning adventure on South Sea Common when I had lain in wait for her to leave Portsmouth Harbour for her trials and had illicitly noted the details of her armaments and sketched her outline. Further over to starboard was the strange shape of the newly converted aircraft carrier, Furious, conspicuous with her flat flight deck and her harshly dazzled painted hull, and the seaplane ship, Vindictive, astern of her. Ahead of us was the 2nd Battlecruiser Squadron, consisting of Australia, New Zealand, Indomitable and Inflexible, all easily recognisable with their tall tripod masts.